The Jets Collective is live right here on YouTube, presented by Prize Picks. Hello, everyone. My name is Jake Asman, alongside ESPN's Rich Simidi and BT Unleashed Brandon Tierney. We got a lot to talk about. Rookie minicamp for the New York Jets getting underway this weekend. We actually got some rookie numbers we will hit on. The latest on Breece Hall will be part of our conversation. And, of course, we finally heard from the brand new coordinators from the New York Jets, Frank Reich on offense, and the Duke of Defense, Brian Duker, on defense. A lot to get into, but fellas, how we doing, Rich? I know you just got off the softball field, and it sounds like you guys had a successful day.
Yeah, 2-0, we swept today. The Baymen are now 2-2 on the season. I missed Tuesday's doubleheader because I spent the last few days up in Bristol, Connecticut. We had a bunch of ESPN meetings that went on for a couple of days, but back out there today, and we had a nice sweep today, a real team effort.
Now, what's the team record here? You're 2-0 today, 2-2 on the year?
You are 2-2 on the year. We just started. We got a long schedule, BT. I don't know if I'm going to make it. We got a 50-game schedule. You know,
wow.
So we're going to be playing softball right through August. We, you know, that's we won awesome. Our championship last year, but we got moved up a division this year, so we're playing with the big boys.
Here's what I'm hearing, Jake. I'm hearing when Rich shows up, they win. When Rich is not there, they lose. That's what I'm taking away from this.
Sounds like it. Sounds like it. What position?
If you
want to
draw that conclusion, that's okay with me.
There you go.
Hey, what position in the field do you typically play, Rich? I'm curious.
I am a left fielder. Yeah, that's what that's my home.
You couldn't do a little shortstop, a little third base, Rich, left field?
Yeah, actually, I played shortstop like my whole life pretty much. But, you know, we have a really good team, and I just kind of feel really at home in left field. It's kind of my deal, and so I'm good there.
Love it. The Juan Soto of the local softball team, Rich Simidi. All right, fellas, a lot to get into here. I mean, Rich, I'll throw this first one to you because you were a part of the press conference. It was held over Zoom with all three of the Jets coordinators. It's the first time that we've heard from Frank Reich and from Brian Duker. Let's do Duker first because I think we could get through that faster than we can with Frank Reich. What did you make of the interaction, the back and forth with Brian Duker? And, of course, you know, we know Glenn's calling the defense. So what did you get out of the conversation with the Jets' new defensive coordinator?
Yeah, I mean, that was somewhat predictable. I mean, he's in a difficult spot. It's not, you know, he's the defensive coordinator in name, but we know Aaron Glenn is calling the shots. He's a young coordinator, a first-time guy. You knew he wasn't going to come into the first interview guns blazing and making headlines, and he certainly did not. Frank Reich was the headline out of the day's Zoom calls. But, you know, Duker wouldn't reveal much. He seems like a good guy. He's got the important takeaway is that he's got a relationship with Aaron Glenn. He speaks Aaron Glenn's language. They were together in Detroit for a couple of years. And that's the important thing, that they're on the same page. That was the takeaway I came away with.
I agree. I think that's fair. I don't know what, you know, if people were looking for more than that. You know, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you just want to come out and not bomb. Not that these press conferences, whether it's favorable or negative, really always paint the picture of ultimately what's going to happen. But for somebody like Duker, and I know Reich's a bigger story, looking forward to really talking about that. Somebody like Duker, though, just get in there and don't trip all over yourself. Don't sweat. You know, don't look around the room like Adam Gase, like you hopped up on NyQuil or something else. Like, just get in, just get out, which he did. I thought he was effective with that. Talked about, hey, I'm going to put the best players out there. My defense is my job is to get stops. And obviously, at the end of the day, the familiarity, Jake, that he's got with Aaron Glenn, the verbiage, the concepts, the philosophy should all be on the same page. So it was good. But if it was bad, that would be a real issue.
He sounded a little nervous, Rich. That was my takeaway just watching it back. Like, I'm not going to kill the guy. It's a press conference in May, first opportunity for him to be a DC. But anytime he was like asked a question, he didn't feel as comfortable as a guy like Frank Reich, obviously, is up there as a two-time NFL head coach and all that. Duker felt kind of anxious in his first interaction with you guys over Zoom.
Yeah, I mean, Reich's done it hundreds of times as a head coach, and Duker kind of reminded me of Tanner Engstrand when Engstrand got in front of the media last year for the first time. And as the year went on, Tanner loosened up a little bit. Now, look, I think the other thing that Duker said that was interesting, he kind of explained his role, right? We know he's not going to be calling the plays on Sunday, but his job is to really help Aaron Glenn through the week. He'll probably be running player meetings. If Glenn can't be in the meeting all the time, he's going to be doing a lot of opponent breakdowns. He'll be helping install the game plan. So there is a job to it. Just because you're not calling plays doesn't mean you're sitting in the corner and fetching coffee for the head coach. It's more than that. He will have a job, And Glenn will be leaning on him a lot because Glenn, and we'll get into this in a second, but Glenn's also been spending a lot of time in Frank Reich's room as well, trying to learn more about Reich and more about the offense. So Glenn is not just sitting alone with Duker in the defensive meeting. He's going around too.
Is this like Darryl Loggins and Adam Gase, Rich? Is that the comparison here? Or is there another example in Jet history you got for Duker and Glenn's relationship?
Well, I mean, that obviously is a comparison that will make Jet fans cringe, but, you know, because of the personalities there involved and the results involved. But yeah, I mean, Darryl Loggins didn't call the plays, but his job was to serve Adam Gase during the week. You know, get me the Buffalo Bills, what they do on 3rd and 5, what are their tendencies? Do get that for me. Get me the cut-ups. So, that didn't work, obviously. If Duker and Glenn know each other real well, I think that relationship would be fine.
A couple of quick things here. Number one, why do you think he was nervous, Jake? I mean, you got guys like Samidi, guys like Catanzaro, guys like Serbi, guys that have been around for decades that have been just writing the truth, by the way, about the New York Jets. So he knows what he's stepping into, man. And yeah, I say this with a smile, but it's going to be the unfortunate reality. He's going to be fetching coffee if this thing doesn't go well, because and now Aaron Glenn might be the one actually making the coffee at Starbucks, the NFL version of Starbucks, but Duker's going to be the one, you know, bringing the boxes in off the truck here. So there's real pressure. We've been through this dance a million times, a fresh face, a hopeful situation, somewhat optimistic, but we got to let it play out. I'm rooting for the guy. We're all rooting for him. But like the nervousness, and I think it's a fair point, Jake. I get it. But I know that you get this as well. Think about your first radio show. I was a little nervous, you know. First time I did public speaking, motivational speaking, I was a little nervous. Like, first time I coached the kids, I was a little nervous. So it's part of being a human. When you're nervous, it's because you care about something.
Yeah. And look, I'm not going to kill the guy, because at the end of the day, we all know it's Aaron Glenn's defense. It's just fascinating that here's Brian Duker. He wasn't part of the original list of defensive coordinator interviews. They interviewed, I think, Rich, 8 total people. Duker wasn't one of them. And then all of a sudden, well, the Wink Martindale thing falls apart. The next day, we get the announcement, oh, they interviewed Brian Duker over Zoom. And then the day after that, he got the job. So just it kind of feels like, you know, just out of, you know, thin air, Brian Duker has appeared to now serve Aaron Glenn. And when he was saying the term serve, another bad Jet memory, I'm thinking of, you know, Nate Hackett using the term serve. His job is to serve the coaching staff and serve who was the intern that replaced Hackett? It was Todd Downing. Right? It just, I got weird vibes from it, but again, it doesn't really matter. It's Aaron Glenn calling the shots.
Exactly. It's Aaron Glenn's show on defense.
Can I give you guys a very quick, but I think it's a pretty funny story. I think you guys will appreciate this. I know our audience will. Cool. Real quick.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what years was Hackett there again? Roughly. I'm like, maybe
2023, 2024?
No, Paul Hackett.
Oh, Paul Hackett. Oh,
yes.
We're going way back. Paul Hackett was there from 01 to 04.
Yes, I think that this was 04, right? Long story short, I'm at the old Meadowlands, and obviously, Rich, the Jets used to be on 1050, as you well know. And I was in the suite watching the game with, I think, LaGreca and Buttle, because they were doing the post-game show as they did for a long time. And the Jets offense, it was just three, punt, 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 punt. I go to the bathroom, I'm at the urinal, and I forget who I'm talking to. And I'm like, this bleeping Hackett dude with this conservative nonsense. This is an absolute joke. I can't stand this. It's so boring. This is the worst. Guess who's washing his hands when he comes out of the stall? Hackett. And he didn't say anything. He looked at me, and his eyes, like lasers, went right through. Because it was halftime. They went from the coach's box to use the bathroom.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm sorry, but I meant what I said. I don't know what you expect there, buddy.
Yeah, Hackett was the fans did not like him. Ooh. He just was – it was a predictable offense. And sometimes in the media, when we do go to the bathroom at halftime, you do get run into the coaches because the coaches go down for halftime, then they rush back upstairs, and they often make that pit stop – at MetLife in the bathroom before they go back into the coach's box. So I can certainly see how that encounter happened.
The Jets can have two Hackett's. Yeah, it's unreal. So we've gotten Nate Hackett and Paul Hackett reference. We got Darryl Loggins and Adam Gase. You know, we just need a Rich Kotai reference.
Can't have two Schottenheimers. I mean, you got to have two Hackett's.
You know, here's a quick, you know, when they fired Herm Edwards fired Paul Hackett right after that Doug Bryan disaster playoff game in Pittsburgh. And Herm had hired Heimerdinger, you know.
Yes.
I forget. You know, he came from Tennessee.
Tennessee.
Yeah. And so Heimerdinger was walking in to take the job, and Hackett was like walking out of the building holding the cardboard boxes with all his belongings. They literally passed each other in the entryway to the building at Hofstra. That's how quick that change took place.
Oof. Unreal. Well, we go from Brian Duker's press conference to Frank Reich, who I would describe it like this, just listening to his conversation. And it was only 9 minutes. I think there's still a lot of questions I would still have for Frank Reich. And this is not on you, Rich, or the beat. I mean, the Jets themselves only made Frank Reich available for 9 minutes. But in the 9 minutes we heard from him, the thing I kept thinking about is this is an adult in the room. I don't know if he's going to be the greatest offensive coordinator, but I am very confident that he will have a real plan, that if him and Geno Smith can get on the same page, the Jets have a real opportunity with Reich to have a functioning NFL offense in the year 2026. Adult in the room, though, that was what kept coming to me as I was listening to Frank Reich talk about his plans for the Jets, Geno Smith, and getting reunited again with Aaron Glenn.
Yeah, the impression, he's got the gray hair and the beard. You know, he projects that image as the old wise sage, you know, play caller. And Frank Reich projected to me a sense of calm, a sense of poise, a sense of, like, I know what I'm doing here. And he's been down this is not his first rodeo. It's probably his 100th rodeo. So he knows what he's doing. I think he's very appreciative of the opportunity, you know, with Aaron Glenn. That was the major drawing card for him. Of course, the Jet fans know they were teammates 30 years ago on that infamous 96 team. We know how that went. But I think he'll be good. I think I really do. And I think he's going to listen to the people around him. Some of the younger coaches. I think one thing that I went back and listened to some Aaron Glenn stuff on Frank Reich, and one of the things he said that I think went unnoticed a couple of months ago, I think they're going to take some of what Reich learned in the college game and incorporate that into their offense schematically, maybe some more RPO stuff. And they're surrounded with some young coaches like Seth Ryan, you know, who brings that younger, maybe innovative type stuff to combine with Reich's experience. And so I think that's a pretty good mix there. I like it.
I think that's a great point with Seth Ryan. Really, really, really good job by you there, Rich. I think that there's certain situations. Think about so many of the other Jet offensive coordinators. Like, we're asking these guys to do miracles, man. Like, the O-line's a mess, or they have no true number. I mean, over the last X amount of years, no true number one, no running game, no quarterback. I mean, it's been a disaster. So as long as Frank Reich is not terrible, and he won't be, I think the offense at bare minimum is going to be competent, and I think it's got a chance to be a lot better than that. And I love when he spoke about how the high grades that he had on Geno at West Virginia and spoke about his resilience and his toughness, both mentally and physically. You know, Frank Reich bounced around the league a lot. He understands that you can only do so much if there's not a whole lot around you, and he is smart enough to know, without any sort of bold proclamation on my part here as to what the Jets offense will become, he knows he's got weapons, and it's his job to deploy them properly. I think he will.
Yeah, I asked him this question, and I didn't throw out this stat to him, but I'll throw it out to you guys. He is the 12th play caller for the Jets in the last 16 years. Jeez. So the offensive coordinator job is just like a revolving door for the Jets. It's probably one of the most volatile jobs in the NFL. And so I asked him, I'm like, Frank, you know, traditionally not a good offense, coming off a 3-14 year unsettled quarterback situation, why would you want this job? And he goes, well, maybe I'm just thinking backwards, but he goes, I look at it as a challenge. That's attractive to me. Try to figure it out. And to me, it was almost like someone handed him a Rubik's Cube, you know, and said, go ahead and solve it. And he's like trying to solve it now. To me, that's the impression I got. I think he's inspired by this challenge. He said he was re-energized at Stanford. And so we'll see. Like, BT, you made a great point. You can have Bill Walsh calling the plays. A lot of times it's dictated by, you know, the talent, the quarterback, the personnel, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it's a great point.
And there were some plays, and we don't need to run through them, but there were a lot of plays. This happened with the Giants as well, where, you know, with Dable and obviously guys were running free in the secondary. I mean, you could call the best play if your quarterback just clutches the ball and doesn't let it go. I mean, the OC is going to get fired. The offense is going to score 10 points. You're going to look inept, but it's really about the concepts marrying the personnel. But it seems like the Jets, Jake, have a chance to at least be functional with both.
100%. It's your point on that. And I go back to, you know, Mike LaFleur with the Jets. The offense functioned with any quarterback that wasn't named Zach Wilson, but Mike LaFleur is the one who ultimately paid the price with his job because Zach Wilson couldn't figure it out with him. And it turns out Zach Wilson seemingly can't figure it out with Sean Payton or Mike McDaniel, whoever his play caller ends up being. So I think you're spot on with that. One thing that I thought Reich said that I loved, and you alluded to it, Rich, just how re-energized he said he felt, kind of like chip on the shoulder. Like, no one is going to pick the Jets to do anything this year. Most people think the head coach is a dead coach walking going into his second year. So, like, the Jets are going to be flying under the radar. And I like the fact that, you know, they don't have to look too far to try and find that internal motivation. And I like that Frank Reich kind of fed into that when talking about himself, talking about Geno Smith, talking about being in a tough spot and trying to turn it around. I think he's got that right mentality that this team's going to need if they're going to do anything this year to surprise people.
Yeah, I thought he had a great quote where he said, you know, I feel Geno's resilience. I feel his hunger. And really, he and Geno and Frank Reich are kind of like, you know, kindred spirits now. I mean, they're both coming off, you know, forget about Stanford for a second. That was kind of an unusual situation. But Reich's coming up. His last NFL stop was rough, man. He got fired after 11 games into his career in Carolina. Geno's coming off a rough season with the Raiders. I mean, 17 interceptions. He led the year. So they're kind of both have that connection. You know, they're both guys who've been around the league. They're coming off a rough thing and they want to redeem themselves. You know, they want to restore what, you know, that positive legacy. And I think they have that in common.
Guys, here's the bottom line. I mean, in his years at Seattle, 68% completion percentage, over 13,000 yards, 76 touchdowns, 36 picks, and a winning record. Okay. You can, I think he was plus four in the wins there. You could take, outside of Aaron Rodgers and Fitzpatrick, there's a chance you could take almost every other Jet quarterback in the last 15 years, add up their stats together, and it might not even be in the neighborhood of what, you know, Geno did with Seattle. So, you know, a lot of the stigma is, well, he got punched in the face by it. We all know that, right? I think most Jet fans are able to kind of plow through that, but I think if you're able to do it, you see a functional, steady quarterback who has earned respect. Nothing was given to him. To me, when you earn respect, boy, that speaks to some character. So I'm looking forward. And Jake, I don't know if I agree, you know, with what you just said, that nobody's going to really pick the Jets to do anything. I hear you big picture, but all the draft grades that have been incredibly favorable for the Jets across the board, I think it's led into, well, you know, the Jets could sneak up on some people. I think the narrative shifted a little bit. Doesn't mean they're going to win. I think it shifted a little bit.
Their win total still is at 5.5, but I'm with you. I do think they could be a scrappy 7-8 win team, maybe better depending on, you know, the quarterback and, you know, just how good the defense actually is under the head coach who said play calling is his superpower. But BT, that's a perfect transition to where I want to go next, because, you know, if the Jets are going to do what you're just saying there, the rookies are going to play a big role. And right before we signed on the air, we actually got ourselves some rookie numbers, which I know every Jet fan was curious about. BT, Bailey going with 31. Do you like that number for a pass rusher?
I don't. The first thing I see, obviously, I'm a Mattingly guy. So Pons, home run number. I like Sadiq at 16. That's interesting. Cooper's good at 83. Some of the big boys make sense. Backup QB, number 10. 31 to me, we got to get a redo. I don't like that.
Yeah,
like
11,
I don't. 31's, I don't like it.
No. Yeah, these numbers are not permanent, I don't think. I think by the end of the preseason, there's a good chance they could change again. I don't like, you know, I'm so old school, guys, that when I see certain numbers, I identify them with other players. So I'm thinking Antonio Cromartie with 31. I see 10. I think Chad Pennington with Klubnik. And I see 16, and this is going to sound really freaking bizarre, but I think of Brad Smith, you know. So
wow.
That's where my head's at. But, I mean, look, 16 for a tight end, it just doesn't seem right. I hate it.
Yeah. I don't like the single-digit stuff. I hate that the NFL has now become college football with the numbers. Bailey at least wore 31 in college, so if he's going to have this, like, ugly, grotesque number, at least, you know, he had tremendous success with it at Stanford and Texas Tech. But Tight end Sadiq 16 is weird. I do like Cooper at 83. Hopefully he's as good as like Santana Moss was the last time the Jets, of course, had a first round wide receiver that wore that number. So I'd take that. And I was curious to see what Pons was going to do because he's got the Aaron Glenn comp, but he can't take 31 because Bailey has it right now. And number five, he wore at Indiana. That's Garrett Wilson's number. So slightly underwhelmed with this, but you're right, Rich. These aren't official, you know, through the preseason into the regular season. So we'll see.
And shame on me for one of our veteran Jets fan pointed out 16 Vinny Testaverde. So bad there. That's definitely a number that, you know, should stand out. But
well let's play the game a little bit more. 72, maybe Jason Ferguson, right? With Parcells. Is that right, Rich?
Wow, that's impressive. Jason Ferguson.
I think, and maybe Lamont Jordan 34 when he was here.
Yeah,
Lamont Jordan 34,
yeah. Right? Yep. I think so.
I'm trying to think of a 78. I can't. I'm drawing a blank on.
Had to be one of those terrible offensive linemen during all these years that we just conveniently.
I think Wayne Hunter
about.
Was 78. You're right. Wait, I think Wayne Hunter was number 78.
Wayne Hunter. Wow.
Do you want to hear? You want to hear a crazy little note on Jason Ferguson? Like,
yes.
I'm so demented that I actually researched this last year. I was trying to find out like which Jet player in history has the best winning percentage, like on the years he was on the team. And I think the demarcation was you had to be at least 100 games with the team.
Okay.
Jason Ferguson has the best winning percentage in Jet history.
What?
Yes, because he played in the Parcells era where they were winning games, and then he played, I think, I forgot what his winning percentage was. It wasn't. Look, there's not a lot of high winning percentages
out of that group,
yeah. But Jason Ferguson had the highest in Jet history. For
and he missed the Coltide years. So Mo Lewis, Marvin Jones, even Keyshawn, like those guys got dented right away. Wow.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
A great job,
Jason
Rich.
Ferguson.
97 to 04. So you're right. I mean, you talk about 97, Parcells comes in, winning record. 98, obviously 12 wins. Even 99 with Vinny going down, they still won 8 games that year. You had a couple playoff years in the early 2000s. That's a great stat. By the way, Boy Green all over this. Morgan Moses wore 78, and then Lijay Douzable, good friend of the show.
Oh,
he wore 78 with the Jets as well. Well, just kind of using the jersey numbers now as a segue to talking about some of the expectations for these rookies. Of course, Jets on the field over the weekend with rookie mini camp. Rich, David Bailey, I think, is a fascinating conversation because the big debate going into, you know, the draft is, well, he's a more ready-made pass rusher. So when you hear that he's more ready-made, that means you expect him to produce. What does success look like in year one for a guy like David Bailey as the number two pick in the draft?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be battling that expectations level. Look, there's no two ways about it. You're coming in as the number two pick in the draft. People are going to expect you to be a difference maker. Very rarely do you find like an Aiden Hutchinson who comes in right away and gets double digits. You know, I think we did the over under with Bailey. Was it last week or the week before? And I thought maybe it would be about 6 or 7 sacks. You know, it's not going to be totally easy for him to come in. The question to me is, like, how much he'll play. Like, are you going to use him a lot on first and second down? Is he going to be in your base package?
He better be.
He better be, Rich. You're paying him $55 million. He better be.
He better be, but maybe not initially. Snap.
You know, they have a good rotation. They have 4 edge rushers. You know, they have Asai, McDonald, and Enigbare. And Bailey. So you got 4 edge rushers. I think they got a good rotation going there. But I looked it up. Historically, a guy who's picked that high is going to – you want him to play about at least 60% of the snaps. 60 to 70% of the snaps would be a good number for him.
Yeah, listen, I'm not a believer in just drafting someone. This was a big conversation going into the draft. Draft somebody, to, you know, to stave off the firing squad. Well, he might not have the ceiling of somebody like Reese, but he's going to play right away, and his floor is not as low. I mean, and I don't even know if the Jets subscribe to that. I just think that they really liked him, and we'll see if they're right. But if you bypassed Reese because he's only 20 and because he's got to learn a lot of stuff and the nuances of the game, a couple of different positions, and Bailey's only out there 50-60% of the time, I'm going to have a big problem with that. He better be out there. David Bailey better be playing a lot of snaps, guys.
Well, I can tell you this, BT. Will McDonald, as a rookie, he played, I think, only 16% of the snaps. So I know Bailey's going to play, obviously, way more than that. But some of the comps you heard for Bailey is, well, you know, him and Will McDonald, not great against the run. Well, I mean, Will McDonald last year played 56, 57 percent of the snaps. I need David Bailey to at least play 60-something percent of the snaps. And if he's not great against the run early on, like, leave him out there and let him learn, because he's the second pick in the draft.
Let him learn. Yeah, listen, yeah. I like Will McDonald. I do. I've always liked him. But, you know, when he came here, you know, Saleh was, that defense was still good, right? So it was tougher to break in. That's number one. So the percentage is adversely affected in terms of snaps. It's funny. We were talking about this before we started the show. I had Joe Beningo on my Unleashed show. And we did very little Jets because we were doing basically everything else. I mean, just wild.
If you want to hear Joe B talk about his acid trips, a must listen.
Yeah, Joe B's talking about taking acid in the early 80s and walking around Chicago. It was phenomenal, right? But I got around to Bailey and some Jet stuff, and he's like, bro, I expected to be Myles Garrett. I'm like, are you on acid now? Myles Garrett? What, dude?
Who only had 7.5 sacks in his first year, because Joe wanted him to be Garrett. He told me on Monday, BT, I had him on. He's like, he's got to be at least Bruce Smith, bro. He's got to be one of the best defensive players ever. And I'm like, well, what if he's Will Anderson Jr.? He's like, I'd take that. I'm like, oh, you'd take a first-team All-Pro. So the expectations for Bailey in year one, he could be a very good player, and it doesn't mean he needs to have 10 sacks immediately as a rookie.
I agree.
Well, he's got his first step, his twitch, you know, he's really fast. He's gifted. He's above the norm. And you look at all the metrics. And so his first step is incredible. And I watched a lot of tape on him over the last couple of weeks. He beat a lot of college tackles from to the outside who just could not handle his speed, his outside speed. Now, it's going to be a different story in the NFL because those tackles are really good. And you can't beat a guy every time with outside speed. You have to develop some counter moves. And so that's where Carl Dunbar comes into, you know, to play. You know, you got to learn some counter moves to succeed on the NFL level.
Rich, would you look at him almost like a young point guard coming in that's more, you know, really good with a handle but not a real reliable jump shot yet in terms of that second move, kind of?
Yeah. I mean, he's going to learn. You know, he has a little power to him. I know some people describe him as more of a finesse player. But, you know, he's 250 pounds. Will McDonald, when he came in, was about 230. It maybe even less, actually. And he was kind of a wiry guy, Will McDonald. Bailey's got some – he's packing a little pounds there on the rear end. You know, he's got some oomph to him. You know, he can – I saw him on a couple of his sacks bull rush the blocker. Most of his sacks, like I said, were outside moves. He's got a good spin move. He can go power occasionally. But, you know, he's a speed guy. But speed guys need to have a little change of pace, too. So that's what he's going to have to work on.
Let's get through some of the other, you know, high-picked Jet rookies and the expectations for them. We'll do the pass catchers up next, of course. Kenyon Sadiq, who's for now rocking the number 16 at the tight end spot. And then, of course, the trade back into the end of the first round, Omar Cooper Jr. What does success look like, in your opinion, Rich, for both those guys in year one?
To me, Sadiq is the most fascinating draft pick because of what he is athletically and the crazy freakish numbers that he put up at the combine. And you saw some of the explosive plays at Oregon, but he's young to the position. He's only played it for 3 years. You know, he didn't play it in high school at tight end. He had some drops last year. He had 6 drops at Oregon, which I think led all FBS tight ends. So he's a developing player. He's still not there yet. To me, the key in his development will be Frank Reich. Can you get him the ball on some, you know, quick screens, you know, some quick in the quick game, just to get the ball into his hands and let him use his athletic gifts? If you use him as a traditional tight end, I think he's going to struggle a little bit because there's going to be some learning curve.
Listen, it's a chess piece that you can put anywhere on the field. And even with the drops, and Rich is right, that's something he's going to have to get over. And I would imagine he will. Seems like a really good young man, a hard worker, invested in his future. So I would think that he'll clean that stuff up. And, you know, even if he is not holding in 5 or 6 a game, which I don't imagine he will out of the chute here, you can't ignore him. Because if you ignore him, he's going to run 50 yards to the house. He's going to be wide open because he's going to beat safeties for sure. And he could run by the occasional corner if he gets off the line of scrimmage properly. So when that happens, even if he's not getting the ball, boom, there's Garrett. Boom, there's Cooper, the shallow cross route. Oh, there's Breece in the flats, a little screen pass, which I believe the Jets will do. Oh, now you want to have some light guys up in the box so you can run. Now we'll stuff it down your throat. We'll run with 3 running backs. So there are a lot of buttons to push and 4 guys who run sub 4.4s. You got weapons.
It's well said. And remember, Frank Reich was on the phone with Kenyon Sadiq, and Woody Johnson handed him the phone, was like, are you a happy guy? Referring to like how happy the Jets were to get Kenyon Sadiq. And it was Frank Reich that the Jets posted screaming, like, yeah, screaming. And that was one of the things I wanted to hear from Frank Reich about yesterday, but the Jets ended the presser after only 9 minutes. Like, how they used him, and what's the role for Mason Taylor? How often is Frank Reich now going to use 12 personnel? Do we see 13 personnel with Jeremy Rucker, and you have three tight ends in certain looks? Like, can the Jets not be predictable and have all these different looks they can run? Because Sadiq can literally play all over the field.
Well, I think over the last 6 or 7 years, you've seen an uptick of about 25% in the use of multiple tight ends. So teams are trending in that direction. I think Sean McVay's been out in the forefront with that. The Rams use a lot of 13 personnel. So they love doing the tight ends and creating matchups and just, I mean, he's a genius at it. So I'm curious to see. And let's not forget about Rucker. I do think he's going to have a role. It's not like they're going to forget him. He's an inline blocker, and they can use him. The Jets, I think, will use some 13 personnel. Frank Reich said on the Zoom call yesterday, you know, he didn't want to give a lot of details about what they were doing, but he said this team ran the ball well last year, so we want to play to our strength. So I think they're going to try to emphasize the run game, and blocking at tight end will be important.
Little H-back for any of these tight ends, Rich, Jake?
I mean, for Sadiq, yeah.
Right.
I mean, he did a lot. Stuff like that. The problem is you don't want to overwhelm. Tight end is the hardest position to learn offensively, except for quarterback, because they can be used in so many different ways. So you don't want to overburden the guy with all the – all of a sudden his head is spinning. Yeah. So you want to feed him at a nice pace. And I think that's where an experienced guy like Frank Reich comes into play.
Omar Cooper Jr., I'm fascinated with his usage as well, Rich, because you obviously have Garrett Wilson, who's the number one, but we know how dynamic Breece Hall could be at times out of the backfield, and Reich talked about getting Breece involved in the offense. We know about A.D. Mitchell, and you've said for months on this show that the Jets really like A.D. Mitchell behind the scenes. So how does Omar Cooper Jr., a guy they traded back into the first round for, how does he get involved in this offense early on and going forward?
Yeah, I mean, the door is wide open for him to land a starting role. I mean, it'll be him, Mitchell, and Garrett Wilson, so he'll be on the field a lot. He's a tough guy. You know, he's got great balance after the catch. We saw that, you know, in the Penn State game, the spectacular catch in the back of the end zone. The one transition for him, you know, Indiana's offense was heavily into the RPOs. I mean, it was very RPO-based. So now it's a little bit different. You know, he's going to have to read coverages. He's going to have to learn more pro-style route running, which could be a transition for him. But he's great with the ball in his hands. So if I'm Frank Reich, how can we play to this guy's strengths? Get the ball in his hands, a bubble screen, that sort of, just to kind of, you know, get him acclimated that way. Let him do what he does best.
Yeah, he's really good in small space. Now, he's not one of the he's not one of the guys who are sub 4.4s. You got Mitchell, you've got Garrett, you've got Breece, you've got Sadiq, but he's 4.42, so he's basically right there. Yeah. And you know, listen, it's one thing to be quick and shifty, which he definitely is. But as Rich is telling you, just you know, slap on the film, and even if it's not the all 22, just look at his highlight reel. He runs through tackles, and I think the way the Jets are going to be able to run the ball effectively. I know everybody's got to be healthy. I know it's a big projection, but it's also May, so that's what we do. I think the Jets are going to beat you up, beat you up, beat you up, beat you up. And he's the kind of guy, when the opposing defense is on the field, which the Jets have never done to defenses for a while, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes, and they're huffing and puffing and they're tired and they don't want to hit, that's when he runs through a tackle. Even a 5-year veteran safety or a hard-hitting corner, he's going to run through some people.
I'm excited to see him just because, Rich, you're spot on. It's wide open for wide receiver 2 right now. And I know there were some people talking about, well, could they add another veteran there? I'm not sure if they will, but I actually, if you guys want to laugh, I actually saw criticism by some after the draft, people saying, well, do the Jets have too many mouths to feed now? Like the Jets actually have too many good football players for Geno Smith to throw the ball to. That was an actual criticism I saw from some people in the media. I guess some of it's the fantasy community. Oh, we can't
stick with fantasy.
Right. It's just wild to me. Like we were killing the Jets because they didn't have any weapons besides Garrett a year ago. And now it's out. Do they have too many weapons? And I'm like, come on now. What are we doing?
Yeah, it's funny. They're the 29th offense in scoring last year, and now all of a sudden they're look, if that's a problem, that's a high class problem to have. I think teams would kill. Look, there's going to be a lot of development that goes on. Cooper, Sadiq, these are young players, 21 years old, 22 years old. So they're going to need a little bit development time. That's why I thought, and I still think, they should go out and get a veteran receiver, someone. Look, there's not a lot of great choices out there now. There's some big names, but they're a little long in the tooth. I'd like to see him go get a veteran receiver.
Tyler Lockett, one of those names?
Excuse me?
How old's Lockett? Was he 34?
He's a little old. I mean, they're all kind of older now. The guys in the market. Where's my sheet? I have a sheet here somewhere with all the receivers.
He played with Geno, so I hate that idea. That's one year deal for Lockett. Yeah.
I know they had a good chemistry.
Just as a stopgap guy, because who's your four? Isaiah Williams is probably your four. Is Arian Smith your five? I mean, Arian Smith made no impact at wide receiver last year. He's a special teams guy. Yeah. I just kind of like to bring in a veteran maybe.
What about Odell? I'm serious.
I don't know if that would be the what's he got left. The Giants worked him out. If the Giants thought he was that great, they would have signed him right away. So,
yeah, but maybe the Giants just didn't want to go back to that well. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't run the way. I mean, nobody runs the way they used to. I get that, but maybe the Jets don't want that noise and that stuff that comes with OBJ.
Yeah.
But if you're looking to rattle the trees for a guy who's your fourth receiver, I mean, bring him in for a workout. I'd at least work him out, Jake. No.
You want to work him out fine. I think I'd rather go down the path of someone like Keenan Allen, or you already brought up Tyler Lockett. A veteran Jet fan mentioned Tim Patrick, who's got a Muji connection from Denver. And he might have played in Detroit, too, with Glenn. I forget. But maybe someone like that would make some sense. By the way, speaking of noise, Russell Wilson takes a meeting last week with the Jets, and then he told the New York Post yesterday at that charity event in Manhattan that he's got an offer on the table for the Jets to be their backup, or he could go and do TV. I know we didn't have that on the rundown sidebar here, but let's get a quick take on Russell Wilson as a potential QB2, BT.
Honestly, I really don't have an issue with it, man. I really don't. Now, I didn't like the video that I saw last week or 2 weeks ago with him in a Savannah Banana uniform. He looked grossly out of shape. I think that came up on the show. I don't know if it was on my show. I think we brought it up here. And I'm not looking to shame the guy. He's got twice the body that I'll ever have. And you give him 3 weeks and he shaves off 10 pounds and he's ready to go. I'm in the business, and he's got a good relationship with Geno. So there's no, I'm coming to take your job. Geno's already spoken out for him, so that's a good sign. They've got a good rapport. He's smart. He's tough. He's a winner. I think that he would be better than Tyrod Taylor at this point. And I've got great respect for Tyrod. I'm happy Tyrod's moved on. I think the Jets had to move on from him. I've changed my tune. If it happens, I'm not going to go crazy like I thought I might.
Rich?
Yeah, I mean, he's having negotiations with CBS Sports. My gut feeling, it sounds like he might end up in TV. The Jets are probably offering him, I'm guessing, $2 to $3 million, somewhere in that range. He made $10.5 million last year with the Giants. He's obviously not going to get close to that from the Jets. So do you want to make $2 or $3 million to be a backup on a team that's probably going to have a losing record? Or do you want to go into TV, save yourself from getting a beating every week, and you don't have to go through training camp? So my gut tells me he didn't play great. BT, I mean, he hasn't played great in a few years.
I agree. He's not coming to be the starter.
He'd be fine in that role, because who are your other options? Cooper Rush or Josh Dobbs? Do you want one of those guys, or do you want Russell Wilson? To me, it really doesn't matter. I mean, if Geno gets hurt, you're probably, going down the toilet anyway. So Russell Wilson's fine for $2 to $3 million.
Jake, where's our guy Jake on this? Let's go, Jake.
I want nothing to do with Russell Wilson. And I think he's a fine person. He's just, there's just a lot that comes with Russ. It's an unnecessary distraction for a guy who's way past his prime. I don't even think he's better than Bailey Zappi at this point. I'd rather just go with Zappi, because, again, if Geno goes down, we're just delaying the inevitable of when eventually Klubnik is going to play, and that's what I want to see anyway. I want to see Cade Klubnik get an opportunity just to get a feel for what we have with him. I don't see the point of Russell Wilson in the year 2026. Great career, but if he's already talking about doing TV, go do TV, man. Now, you're already retired. If you're telling us you might retire to go be a broadcaster, go do that. Go be famous. Go be Russell Wilson, married to a supermodel, and leave the Jets alone. I just don't think they need to do it.
You think he's definitely better than Tyrod Taylor? I can't say that. And I don't think there's enough as much distraction as you make it out to be. Like, I get it, Ciara, understood. I think he's a good teammate. I think some guys think he's a little corny with whatever, but I don't think he's going to start any issues or expect that he's going to be handed stuff. I think if he signed for $2 or $3 million, he would know exactly what he's getting in for. And Rich, maybe I'm wrong. He strikes me as the kind of guy you've got to rip the uniform off him. TV's going to be there forever. The guy's still taking at bats. Like, the guy still wants to play baseball. He is an athlete and a competitor. And I think he's looking to probably squeeze another year out of it. I don't have an issue with it.
He said he still thinks he can play at a high level. That's what he told the New York Post. A lot of athletes say that when the end is near. I think he's better than Tyrod Taylor. I think he's better than Bailey Zappi. Yeah. Is he going to come in if Geno gets hurt? Is he going to come in and carry you for the rest of the year? Probably not at this point. But everything I've heard, I don't know Russell Wilson. Everything I heard about him, he's a good teammate. Yes, he is corny. He comes off as a little bit fake sometimes.
Yeah, he does.
And I don't think it'll pose a distraction. And the Jets, you know, the people that I talked to, they said they did go to Geno, and they said, you know, who are some of the guys, you know, you'd be comfortable with? Because the comfort is a big thing for the Jets in that particular role. And he mentioned Russell Wilson. So that's why they went out and brought him in for the interview. We'll see. I will probably know. Well, their OTAs are starting in a couple of weeks, so you would think they would probably have an answer by then.
I just think that there's certain guys, whether it's Beckham, whether it's Russ, when you're, you know, two or three layers removed from being the guy, like that first year could be a little, is his head real? Does he still think he's a stud? And then the more you're marginalized, for lack of a better word, I think you come to realize where you're at. And if you love the game and you want to play for the joy of the game, I don't think it will be a distraction. Now, I think what Jake just said is on point, like, and you too, like, if Geno goes down, the season's pretty much over, but I really wouldn't have an issue with it.
Yeah.
Well, I won't lose sleep over it. Again, he's the backup, and I just don't think he's very good anymore. I mean, like, I know he had the one great game against Dallas earlier in the year, but then he followed that up with an absolute stinker, and Dable couldn't wait to bench him and go to Jackson Dart. I don't think the Jets need to mess around with Russell Wilson. I'd rather just have Zappi and Klubnik. If Klubnik can maybe win the job, great. If not, Zappi could play the first half if there's an injury, and then you're going to go to Klubnik at some point down the stretch if you're out of it. I just think it's a waste. Like, we don't need to spend time being like, oh, can Russell Wilson lead the Jets to a win this week as Geno Smith is dealing with an ankle sprain? Like, it's just a silly narrative because we know how this works. If they sign him, he's definitely going to play because every Jet quarterback ends up playing at least one game. I don't feel like watching Russell Wilson in a Jet uniform.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Can't put up a strong, I mean, to me, it's kind of a footnote almost.
Real quick on the rookie expectation. We won't do all that, but just D'Angelo Pons, I know a lot of fans are curious to see what his role will be, Rich. Do you think he could start right away? And if so, where is he starting, inside or outside?
My prediction is he starts outside. I know they talked about cross-training him inside. He's never really played inside. And that's a different position from outside corner. I mean, inside, it's different angles. You're playing with different leverages against the receiver. You have to be much better against the run because you're in the box. I think he'll be outside. I bet you he's starting on opening day outside. He is a good football player. Since the draft, I've had an opportunity to talk to some people around the league. He is a really good football player. He's everything they want in terms of competitiveness and toughness. And he's fast, and he catches the ball. That's what they need on defense. They need a guy who can take the ball away. We all know that. And so I don't think the competition's great at that spot. I think it'll be Brandon Stevens on one side, and the other side, to me, is wide open. And I'm predicting Pons starter.
Yeah, Pons is the guy that it's pretty much drawn universal praise. I mean, and some of the other picks have as well. I'm really curious to see what Payne's bringing here. I am really curious about him. He dropped to a point nobody thought he was dropping to. He's big, he's strong, and he's fast. He runs for a safety. So that safety room's gotten a little bit better during the offseason. That's been problematic for a while. But I'm not going to sit here and say he's going to start. I would be surprised if Payne's not getting some real reps pretty early in the season.
He's got to make the team as a seventh-round pick first. But I did like him, BT. I didn't think he'd be there in the seventh. Everything I read was that he was a fourth-round player that happened to be there.
Yep. But so do you think there's a chance he doesn't make the team? I get the seventh-round stigma. I don't think there's any chance he doesn't make the team.
Oh, I think he'll make the team. GMs don't like cutting their draft picks. I mean, you have to be really, really bad to not make the team.
Ja'Kai Polite?
I think he will. I think he'll be a factor immediately on special teams with that kind of height, speed. He's going to be a factor on special teams. They do have some veteran guys ahead of him at safety. None of them are great. I mean, Minka, I'm curious to see. I've been talking to some people recently about Minka. You know, hasn't been a great player the last couple of years. So curious to see just how much he has left. But, Payne certainly fits the build. Like, if you could draw up a prototypical safety, I mean, a 6'3 guy with range and speed. I mean, I think he'll be a big factor on special teams.
If you have a question for the guys to answer, super chat it in. We'll put it up on the screen at the end when we do a little Q&A. You're watching the Jets Collective. Hit the like button and make sure you subscribe to the channel. And a reminder that if you ever miss the live YouTube show here on the Jets Collective YouTube channel, we podcast every episode of the Jets Collective in audio form on Spotify, Apple, or iHeart. Let's talk about Breece Hall, Rich, because there were some conflicting reports this week. Boomer Esiason said on the radio that he heard the Jets offered a contract around 4 years, $60 million. I know SNY's Connor Hughes said he spoke with people on both sides of the negotiation and that contract was never offered. What is the latest with Breece Hall? And ultimately, the Jets have till July 15th to get a long-term deal done, or he has to play on the tag. Where do things stand with Breece and the Jets?
Yeah, it's funny. I was locked up in some meetings up in Bristol, and I came out and I saw my phone was like these reports about Breece, 4 years, $60 million, 48 guaranteed. And I texted someone and I said, who reported that? And someone said, Boomer. So I think everyone's assuming Boomer is getting inside info from Frank Reich. They're obviously close friends. Look, if the Jets offered Breece Hall $48 million guaranteed and he didn't take it, he's crazy. That's an insane amount of money. I do not believe they made that formal offer. Could it be $15 million a year? Yeah, I mean, I could see that coming in, but it's all about the guarantees, especially for a running back. $48 million guarantee is just an insane amount. The Jets won't offer that much. Like I said in last week's show, I think he gets 2 years of his contract guaranteed, like Kenneth Walker did in Kansas City. So you're talking about $28 million. I could see Breece falling right into that range there. That's basically two franchise tags, $28 million, $29 million. I think it'll fall right in there. So I don't think the Jets offered 48 guaranteed.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I just think that in terms of the timeline here, I just think it's the timeline is what it is. Like, they had other things that they had to do. They had to get their war room ready. They had to do it then, get ready for the draft. That obviously all the combine stuff and the Senior Bowl and everything they had to do. And, you know, bringing the coordinators, bringing new coaches. So, listen, I'm not a reporter. That's Rich. And Rich is the best at this. So I'm not. But common sense tells me that the Jets want him to stay. I think he wants to stay. I think they'll get to a number that is palatable for both. I believe it'll happen before July 15th. And that's what I think is going to happen. But, like, I don't think anybody should be alarmed right now. Right, Jake? Or Rich, where, oh, my God, it's not done yet. I mean, they had a lot of fish they had to fry before they get to Breece Hall.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, I'm not, from a fan perspective, I'm not worried about it. Even if they didn't get a deal done, well, I think it makes sense just to do it. I think Breece is a good player. We could debate how good, but he's never been in a great situation, obviously, as a running back playing in this offense. I just think it should get done because, like, we know what the numbers are. Like, look at what the franchise tag is for a running back over the next 2 years. It's typically a three-year deal where only two of the years are guaranteed, as Rich brought up. The only question I have is, there's all these rumblings, oh, Breece is unhappy, he doesn't want to be here. But, like, to me, I think he's unhappy because they've been losing, and I think he wants to be paid. I think if the Jets paid him, I think he would be a Jet. I don't think he's going to, you know, pull a Le'Veon Bell and just not show up. Like, I think even if they don't get a deal done, like, it behooves Breece Hall to sign the tag, have a great year, so if the Jets don't pay you, someone else is going to give you the big contract that you're looking for.
The Jets have the leverage here because they have him on the franchise tag. So there's also the other factor of you got Jahmyr Gibbs and Bijan Robinson who are looking for extensions. Obviously, they're going to get more than Breece Hall because they've accomplished more. They were also former first-round picks. So, but if I'm Breece, I'm just going to wait to see if those guys do their deals because that's just going to raise – it's the rising tide raising all boats. You know, so that's going to raise Breece's asking price a little bit. So if I'm Breece, I'm just going to chill out. But in the end, on July 14th, whatever, you know, he's going to have to decide, do I want to take a chance? You know, injury. I've already had one major injury in my career. Do I get $14 million guaranteed and I take my chance next year going out in free agency? Or do I take the Jets offer? And I'm speculating a little because I don't know what it is, but let's say $28 million. You know, that's a little bit of a risky play for a running back because we know it's a short shelf life for that position. Yeah. So that's what he's going to have to ultimately decide. But of course, the Jets know that. Muji is a smart negotiator, so they're going to use that to their advantage. And we'll see how it comes out. It'll probably go right down to the wire.
Well,
as these things often do.
Yep. As a second round pick, he doesn't have that first round money benefit. So you would think that that would make the decision a little bit easier in terms of what you just laid out there. You know, maybe play on the 1 year, 14 mil, and at least bang 14 in the account and then go and then just tear it up with a much better offense and maybe get paid next year or somewhere else. But, you know, we all know Breece is good and he's explosive and he's been misused and the Jets have stunk. But Rich and I can't answer this. I don't like some of the tweets he puts out there. I think it's a little juvenile. Nothing like horrendous, but just like, dude, read the room, man. Are there any character concerns or any fears within the organization that he's not all in? You would have to answer that for us.
I know at the end of the he is a little immature, but you know, he's a 24-year-old guy. I mean, some of the social media stuff, but also late in the year, I think there were some players that, you know, he came out of that last game, you know, and some players I don't think like that. You know, I think he said he had a knee injury at the end there, and maybe that didn't sit well with some guys. He didn't win the MVP on his own team. He rushed for 1,000 yards on a 3-14 team, and he does not get the MVP. And I know some Jets people are saying that the voting that had nothing to do with it, the voting was done ahead of time, you know, a couple of weeks before the end of the year. But really, I mean, to me, that speaks volumes. You know, when they give it – nothing against Isaiah Williams. It was like a fantastic story last year. But that, to me, jumped out a little bit. Breece Hall is a good running back. He is a very good receiver at his position. He is not a great running back, in my opinion. I think the metrics will support that. If you look at his run over expectation, it's not great. You know, his explosive plays aren't great. But he's a good running back. If they offered him over $30 million guaranteed, I would think that would be a little rich if I were the one holding the purse strings. So I think somewhere like 3 years, $42 to $44 million with about $28 or $29 guaranteed would be a fair offer.
And I'd do it because, again, if you got to slightly overpay, you know, you have $150 million in projected cap space next year, most in the league, and I'm just trying to put the team in the best position for whoever the heck the quarterback might be going forward. We'll get to Brendan Sorsby here before we get to a little Q&A at the end of our show. But since we're talking about Breece Hall, we're presented by Prize Picks. Download the Prize Picks app. Use the promo code HMA. If you put in $5, you'll get $50 available in lineups. Prize Picks already has future numbers for Breece Hall. So this is what Breece is projected to do this year, BT. I mean, if he stays healthy, 975 and a half yards to me feels like a number he definitely could go over. Same thing with the receiving yards number, because I do think if he's healthy, he's going to be used a lot in this offense. But I definitely feel confident about the rushing yards if healthy. Your thoughts on any of these Prize Pick options for Breece Hall?
I'm laying the wood on the over on the yards. Like, I can see when the Jets went 1-15, the one team they beat was the Cardinals, right? And Adrian Morrell ran for like 200-something yards that game. See, I can – number one, Breece has the talent to do it. I can see Breece having one or two – maybe not 200, but one or two games where it's like 160, 170, and he houses a couple of long ones because of the other attention and the O-line being really good that the other receivers and speedsters are going to be required to get paid attention to. So I'm easily going over that. Obviously, anytime you throw down some money with this stuff, injuries are a big part of it. But that I don't want to say it's easy money because none of this is easy, but it's about as easy as it could get. I'm going over with that, Rich.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you. And this is not a commentary. Breece Hall, in my opinion, is a 1,000-yard rusher. But Braylon Allen is coming back healthy. And that's something they didn't have for most of last year. It was the Breece Hall show. I think you could see more of a split in the workload. So I'm going to go a little bit under the 975.
Interesting. Is there a number for Breece here that you like the more on, Rich?
You mean, yeah, I would say, you know, I might even go under on the rushing touchdowns because I think, you know, in short yardage stuff, I think it could be Braylon Allen. Yeah. I would say maybe they go over on receiving yards, although that's a lot of receiving yards.
He's done that every year of his career. He's healthy.
Yeah, okay, I'll go over on receiving yards. I was just thinking of the fact that last year was, but let's forget about last year. There was,
please.
Justin Fields was the quarterback, and no one was catching the ball.
350 last year he had receiving.
Yeah, I would say over, and he wasn't even that big a factor in the passing game. I think they'll try to make him more of a factor, so I'll go over on the receiving yards.
There you go. Make your picks on Breece or any Jet. They got a bunch of rookies, and we'll continue to cover all the different odds for Jets players in future episodes of the Jets Collective. Shout out to Prize Picks for sponsoring our program. Before we get to the Q&A, Rich, what do you make of the Brendan Sorsby conversation that many Jet fans are having? Of course, the Texas Tech quarterback fighting for his eligibility right now. If he doesn't get eligibility, there's a lot of talk of him declaring for the NFL's supplemental draft where the Jets essentially would have a chance to bid on his services. He's a kid that if he had this big year that many were projecting at Texas Tech, he was going to be part of this great 2027 QB class. What are your thoughts on Sorsby, and have you heard any interest from the Jets side of things in Brendan Sorsby?
Well, they've obviously done some work on him, or they are now, probably, for sure. I think he hired a heavyweight attorney, and Jeffrey Kessler, you know, a famous labor relations attorney, and so they're going to fight this. He has to, they're fighting with the NCAA. My gut tells me that, based on the letter of the law, the way he supposedly bet on games at Indiana. You lose your eligibility. So I think there is a good chance that he ends up in a supplemental draft, probably at some point in July. It's kind of a complicated the way they do the supplemental draft. They group it into different categories, and the Jets would be in the upper category based on last year's record. Each team puts in a bid. The Jets would say, I will bid a second round pick for him. And so if no one takes him in the first round and they get to the second round, then if the Jets have the highest pick in the second round, they get the player. So it is kind of a bidding process. He's a really good player. He's probably a first-round talent. 27 touchdowns, 5 interceptions last year for Cincinnati. Got a ton of money to go to Texas Tech. He's 6'3". He's a good athlete. He ran for almost 600 yards rushing last year. So you're talking about a player who, if he plays his last year, would probably be in the 2027 first-round conversation. So that's the thing the Jets have to wrestle with. I don't know where would you, if they got him, you have Cade Klubnik. So you're going to have two rookies on your roster.
Why not?
And then what do you do next year? If you end up with a high pick, you have all the draft picks.
I'm worried about next year.
There's a lot of factors, but I'm sure knowing the Jets, they are doing their due diligence. They are scouting this person just in the event that he becomes available.
Rich, is it a blind bid? By the way, you explained that great. Does everybody know what you're bidding, or is it a blind bid?
No, I think it's a blind bid. Oh, so, okay. Like, if I were the Jet, let's just throw in let's say we don't want to spend too much. We'll put in a third-round pick for him.
Yep.
I don't think the other teams know what you put in.
Okay.
And the draft literally just takes a few minutes. Like,
I know.
The NFL knows, like, right away who's going to – yeah. So they just collect all the bids. If no one's in the first round, then they look at the highest second round bid. If no one's in the second round, they go to the third round and on and on. It happened with Rob Moore. I mean, we're going way, way back in 1990. The Jets gave up their first round pick to bring in Rob Moore in 1991. And
it worked out. He was good.
He was very good. Dick Steinberg fell in love with him, and he was a good player until Rich Kotite traded him away to Arizona, went on to have I think he had over 10,000 yards receiving in his career. But obviously with Sorsby, the Jets are going to have to put a lot of thought into that because we know it's a need, a long-term need. You can't say Cade Klubnik is going to be your long-term answer. He's kind of a lottery ticket at this point. So Yep. It's a fascinating thing that I'm sure will be making some headlines in the middle of July. NFL loves making headlines 12 months a year. So now our nice, peaceful July might be interrupted by a supplemental draft.
I'm pretty sure the Giants did it with Dave Brown as well years ago.
Yes, they
coming
did.
Coming out of Duke, right? So, all right, here's my opinion shifted on this. My initial reaction was no. Like, it just, to me, it speaks to a character flaw. You know you're getting NIL money. It's not like you're destitute. You're bringing home money from mom and dad or grandma. I mean, like, the kid's probably driving a Benz on campus. He's got hundreds of thousands in the bank already. So some of the wires are loose there, right? But in not to play psychologist, but you know what I mean. I think that there are certain things where I'm just like, if it was a sex crime, that's different. To me, this is a very serious youthful mistake born out of indiscretion and stupidity, to be very honest with you. And you talk about a lottery ticket. I'm in the business of collecting as many as I can, because if I've got five versus, and you have two, I've got it. Now, it might be an infinitesimal chance more of winning. I've got more of a chance. I have flipped on this. And the fact that they've got all those first round picks next year, they don't really have any needs on the old line. They've got a lot of good young talent. I almost feel like this is the time to swing. I wouldn't be able to justify it if they had no tackle or on either side, turnstiles everywhere, you know, no number one receiver. Then I'm like, yeah, you just got too much to do. I actually think the Jets should be in the mix on this. I absolutely do, Jake.
So I'm kind of in the middle of both you guys here. I'm interested if, one, he's obviously going to rehab for this gambling problem, and we've seen people be able to overcome that. But this is a big deal. It's going to be something that follows him. So you got to make sure if you're going to invest, you know, a notable pick into the guy, that you're not worried about him venturing off in New York City and going down to Atlantic City or just getting in trouble with gambling and sports betting. You got to vet the character first. And I look, the talent is undeniable, and obviously – you have an opportunity to get a head start on the 2027 quarterback class by bringing this guy in, getting him in your building, seeing what he has. The problem I have, though, is one, what are you bidding? Like, I don't know if I'd want to bid more than a third round pick. I think at the most I want to do that, but I don't know if a third round pick would be enough. There could be a team that's maybe like the Steelers or the Vikings that aren't typically picking near the top of the draft that see the value in getting a guy who could be that level of player. Maybe they would bid a two. So I don't think the Jets would get him, but hypothetically, I don't know if I'd want to bid more than just a third. And then the other question I have, it goes back to this coaching staff. Are we sure Aaron Glenn and Frank Reich, are they here a year from now? And then you have a new coaching staff that comes in. What do you do with Sorsby? You still have Klubnik, and then you have the three ones in 2027. It's just a very tricky situation when you have uncertainty with your coaches, and then you might be burning the pick if they're like, we didn't like Brendan Sorsby. We want to get our own guy. So there's just a lot of unknown with the situation before I'm ready to say, yep, the Jets definitely need to be aggressive. This is a guy they should pursue.
It's a lot of layers to this. And I think we probably should say allegations at this point, because I think they're still investigating that, right? I don't know if it's been proven yet so we should say allegations.
Allegedly, sure.
That's the journalist in me.
But, absolutely.
Sorry about that. But
no, you're right.
But it's a multi-layered thing, but look, I'm sure the Jets will have their security people investigating his background, just like they do on every prospect, and coming up background checks, vetting, talking to people who know him, and then coming to a decision.
Well said. All right, some super chats here before we wrap. Again, it's the Jets Collective. Appreciate everyone who's tuned in. We have over 315 people watching live on a Thursday here in May. That's how you know
there you go.
The Jet fan base is special. And big shout out to everyone who's been a part of our rise here on the Jets Collective channel. Derek writes in, I love the show. You guys are the best. What are you guys most excited/optimistic about this upcoming season with the offense or the defense? Keep up the great work. My defensive one is easy, guys. I'm excited to watch this thing called an interception, which I think will happen at some point over the 2026 Jets season.
Rich, so why don't you take three? Go ahead, Rich.
I don't know what an interception is anyway. I haven't seen one in about a year and a half. What am I most excited about? I think the offense. I'm an offensive guy. I'm a quarterback guy. I write a lot of stories about quarterbacks. I'll have a story on Frank Reich in tomorrow's ESPN.com. I'm curious to see if Frank Reich can get more out of this group than we've seen in the last few years. And that's the thing. I'm curious to see Geno. You know, there's talent there. And I'm just curious to see if was it him or was it the Raiders last year? How much was him? How much was the Raiders, you know, dysfunction? So that's what I'm most curious to see.
Listen, I've always described the Jets offense for way too long this way. There's two NFLs. There's the NFL that you watch on the red zone, you gamble in, you got your fantasy, and then you watch the Jets. And I am just bluntly excited to watch modern offense. Like, I'm just excited to watch an offense that's going to have, you know, move the sticks 3, 4, 5 times in a possession, not always settle for the field goal, punctuate some drives with touchdowns, sniff 30 points, which I think they could do a couple of times. Like, a modern offense. I'm actually really, I can control myself here. I'm really excited to watch the Jets offense.
Scoring points. What a concept. Shout out to Patty, who became a channel member. Another way to support the Jets Collective. Thank you very much, Patty. Upstate Patty. Jet fan writes in, Rich, what are reasonable numbers for David Bailey in year one? Sacks, TFLs, pressures, etc.
Well, pressures, we're really getting into the weeds there. But, you know, like I said, I think 6 sacks, 7 sacks, somewhere in that range. That's a really good year for a rookie player. I think, you know, having Will McDonald on the other side is going to help. You're talking about 2 speed rushers. I think that'll cause some problems for opposing offenses. So TFLs, you know, that's hard to say. I watched a lot of Bailey tape. I did see him make some TFLs, not counting sacks, where he just shot through a gap and was able to run laterally and chase down a running back from behind. The man can run. The man has speed. He's got a giddy up acceleration like I haven't seen in a while. So I would say 6 sacks, you know, maybe 10 TFLs and the pressures. I'd be guessing on that one.
I want at least 8 sacks. The other stuff, Rich, you nailed it. TFL's great. I want at least 8 sacks. I want to see a quarterback smashed and grabbed from behind and strip sacked and pummeled and Bailey in the middle of it at least 8 times.
I think his number on Prize Picks is 7.5, so I think 8's fair. And can he be disruptive, right? Like, to me, it's not always about sacks. It's, are you helping create turnovers? Are you batting passes in the air like J.J. Yeah. Watt would do that would lead to interceptions? Like, just different ways to disrupt the game beyond just the sack number, I think, is important. I want to shout out Jason, who's watching the show from Jerusalem.
Wow.
Shout out to you,
wow.
Jason. We got Jet fans all over tuned into the Jets Collective here.
Great.
Kyle Clifton writes in, question for BT. Who's scarier, Aaron Glenn as an in-game strategist or St. Thomas More CYO hoops teams? I saw your tweet last week.
Yeah, I this is obviously inside stuff, so I won't bore everybody. 2 things about St. Thomas. Number one, a couple things. It's where Chris Mullin, you know, harnessed his jump shot, right? And they had a really good team. We usually beat them, though, more times than not, even though Jimmy Schaefer was a great player who played at Hofstra, guy that I grew up with in Flatbush, really good player. Shout out to him. But the floor, it wasn't wood. It was like that ceramic slippery. So you're always, like, licking your hands. And then, you know, back then we used to wear Nike Dunks or Converse Weapons and trying to make sure they weren't slipping. But, phenomenal. It's a basketball chapel is what that gym is. I love it.
Super chat from veteran Jet fan who goes, what do you think about the Jets acquiring Andy Dalton now that the Eagles have 4 QBs with Hurts, McKee, and recently drafted Cole Payton? VJF is all over this stuff. This to me makes some sense, Rich, because obviously Andy Dalton has the Frank Reich connection when they were in Carolina together. Any thoughts on a potential veteran QB trade? A guy like Dalton, I think, would make sense.
Yeah, I was just talking. When I was up in Connecticut, I was talking about this with our Eagles writer, Tim McManus, and he thought there was a chance they could keep 4 quarterbacks there. I think Howie Roseman still would listen to an offer for Tanner McKee. I think they probably would, earlier in the process back in March, wanted something like a 2nd round pick, which is way too high for him. The Jets obviously won't give up that. Andy Dalton didn't play great last year. I mean, he hasn't been good in a couple of years. So
he played against the Jets, right? Didn't Bryce Young get hurt in that game? I was actually at that game. I think it was a miserable watch.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's got the relationship with Reich, but, the Eagles just traded for the guy, so I can't see them turning around and cutting him. So I would say I tend to doubt that.
I think I'd rather have Russell Wilson over Dalton at this point.
Yeah, honestly, they might be the same level of player at this point.
It's the same.
Another one from VJF here. He goes, does Rich know any of the details behind Frank Reich's contract with the Jets? Carolina is still paying Reich on the final year of a 4-year contract he signed in 2023.
That is true. He's still getting paid by the Panthers final year. Nice gig if you can get it. But, typically, look, I don't think Frank Reich is doing this for for peanuts, that's for sure. So the Jets are, I mean, coordinators can make, you know, a couple, at least a couple of million dollars, you know, two, three, you know, the real good ones could go up to four. So I'm sure he's getting a really nice offer from a deal from the Jets, and it's offset this year by the Panthers. I'm sure he's up there for sure.
You know, he's making money. I'd be more interested in the actual length of the deal. 3 years. I mean, is that a good guess? Maybe four.
Typically coordinators get 3 years. Okay. So, yeah.
He mentioned, Rich, that he had other potential opportunities, but this was the job he wanted. Like maybe he could have been a quarterback coach or like a senior analyst, right? But like, I don't think any team besides the Jets was going to give Frank Reich an opportunity to be a coordinator in 2026.
Yeah, I think he could have stayed on at Stanford in like an advisory role or something like that. I hadn't heard him connected with any coordinator openings. And I don't think he wants to be a head coach anymore. He's done that. And I think he's just happy in the role he's in, at least from talking to people who know him. And just the vibe I got, you know, yesterday was that he said he's having a blast. You know, I'll take him at his word.
Last one here. This is from Kitchen M7871. What are we doing at kicker? Yeah, last year it was Nick Falk. It was great. We didn't have to worry about kicker. And now here we go again with the kicker roulette. I know Chris Banjo spoke yesterday, Rich. Your thoughts on the kicking situation?
Yeah, disappointing right now. But again, like you said, Jake, I mean, Falk didn't come in until the first week of training camp when they had some what's the word I would use to describe the first couple of practices were not good. You know, balls were flying in different directions. You know, they couldn't find a kicker there. But, you know, Mebus turned out to be a really good kicker for the Rams. You know, the guy's got talent. He just had a bad week. And so they signed and I'm going to apologize. I don't have his name, but they signed the BYU kicker, the undrafted free agent. He didn't have a great 25 season, but he had a really good 24 season. Kickers, that happens sometimes. They get into these funks. So maybe if they can recapture what he had a couple of years ago, he could be the guy. I don't think it's going to be Cade York. I really don't. They have three kickers on the roster. They got Lenny Craig, who is a German-born kicker who kicked in Europe before he came over and spent time, I think, on the Atlanta practice squad last year. So it is wide open, guys. I mean, if you guys know anyone who kicks really well, they can tell them to send their tape and resume to Darren Mooji.
I don't know why I'm not worried about this. Maybe I should be, but just figure it out, man. I have too many other things to worry about with this team. The Jets generally resolve their kicking situation. That's like one thing that they do pretty well. They're actually usually pretty good at that. So yeah, not worried.
There's always veterans out there, you know. So it's, believe me, the Jets have other bigger fish to fry.
Shout out to Connie Carberg, who, Rich, I know you know well, first female scout in NFL history, part of the Jet family. She goes, the UFL has some kickers, and she's right. I mean, the Jets kicker in week one might be in the UFL right now, for all we know.
I would trust Connie's words. She's been scouting players her entire life. If she says there's kickers there, then there's kickers there.
Oh, she's love great. It. She always jumps in on Twitter. I love Connie. Shout out to her. She's great.
Connie's awesome. Yep. 100%.
Connie's the best.
Gentlemen, another episode in the books. This was a lot of fun. BT, I was laughing when you were just like, I got other things to worry about. Yeah, we're worried about the Knicks right now. We got OG hamstring to be worried about. We'll figure out Jets kicker when we get to training camp in July.
It'll resolve itself. Let's get Ben Rice's hand right, and let's get OG's hamstring nice and iced up. And probably he'll be plays in game three. Make sure he's good to go in game four.
Well said. Yanks up 9-2 right now, too. So, you know, the baseball's good right now.
Nice.
And even the Mets are red hot right now. So, Rich, you got that.
Three in a row.
Yeah. There you go. Good times for New York sports.
That boy, Rich.
Thanks again, Tim.
No, just say I had to throw it in there.
Love it.
Rich. Mets. Let's go. Mets go.
Let's go. Another episode of the Jets Collective in the books. Big thanks again to everyone who tuned in. Shout out to Prize Picks for sponsoring our program. We'll be back next week. We'll have rookie OTAs, rookie minicamp, to fully recap on the pod. That and much more. He's Rich Cimini. My name is Jake Asman. This has been another episode of the Jets Collective. We will talk to you next time. See you later, everybody.